The Fan on Demand.
We got the two Nova Scotia boys going nuts over here.
No, just one of us.
Just one of them. It's the Friday Roundtable. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCown. McCown will be back in a week. Sid Sexero will be here next week. Ken Reed of Sportsnet. Elliot Friedman, Hockey Insider.
What are you?
And Arash Madani.
What are you over there, Friedman?
Over here. Over where?
Over there on that side of the Atlantic.
Arash Madani, globetrotting.
No idea.
Elliot, your beard is way better than the beard Sid's been rocking. And I'm sure you're not growing a beard. You just didn't shave today.
No. I got to tell you.
I really remember, let yourself go in the summer.
In the summer.
The
one of my first ever TV interviews, they asked, how much older would you look like with a beard? And I go, 5 years. And they said, how do you know that? And I said, because it would take me that long to grow one. Sid would probably be about 25 years old.
Sid looks like a carnival worker, doesn't he, Blair?
That's the second time you've used that.
Third.
Carney. He looks like a carny barker. He should be working the teacups or something like that.
Well, the color game, $4. When you win, reach in, get in. $2 in the corner, $4 winner on the roof. Play the blue, God loves you. 4-1 when you win, reach in, get in. You know the game, Madani. Bill Lynn shows.
Bill Lynn shows. Nova Scotia Provincial Exhibition.
How much money have you lost playing those?
Oh, the collar game, at least $10 every summer.
Did you ever actually grab the ring to see if it fit over what you were supposed to throw it on?
Never. The bottle cap one? Yeah. I lost a lot of games in the bottle one, but the collar games where you won the big money at the Kearney or the Truro Exhibition. My mother, by the way, finished second in Miss Nova Scotia at the Truro Exhibition.
What year was that?
Like, I think about 1970.
How many competitors were there?
I think that was the last time Mark Burley won at Yankee Stadium.
Hi, Mom. She's in Toronto this week.
Is she?
Yeah.
Wow.
In case you haven't figured out, Ken Reed is from Pictou, Nova Scotia, and Arash Madani's from Truro. Ken used to go and buy his pants in Truro.
I think
and
we still do.
Still does.
Baseball cards.
We still do.
Anyhow.
Or catch Acadia lines in Truro. These inside jokes brought to you by.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for more Fat Jerry stories.
Acadian Lines is the Greyhound of Atlantic Canada.
There is a small pocket
it's like the
of
gray
the country
goose.
Laughing
gray
at this.
Gray Goose in Manitoba. Used to have Gray Goose.
Really?
Gray Goose in Manitoba, yeah.
Yep, like yep. I always say, Elliot, as long as it's funny to me. I don't care.
That's all that matters. Speaking of funny, I got no segue. I was really trying to think of that. Well, I think this is kind of funny. I mean, we know that Larry Tannenbaum, John Bon Jovi and the Rogers family have been interested in the Buffalo Bills. In purchasing the Bills, we've heard for a while that they were going to get involved in it, that they were a group that had hired some sports brokers to take a look at it. And it makes a certain amount of sense. What we learned this week from John Warrow of the Associated Press in Buffalo was that the same group had commissioned feasibility studies, not only on the feasibility of having an NFL team in Toronto, but looking at three particular sites to build a new football stadium in Toronto, those sites being one on the waterfront, one in Mississauga, and another one downtown. I don't know where the other one was going to be. The problem with that is, first of all, there's a lease, but also there's a real matter of political delicacy in Buffalo right now, indeed in Western New York. And if you want to buy the Buffalo Bills, you probably, not only do you not want to be making it look like you're putting the thing on wheels to go to Toronto, there's also financial penalty if you do that for breaking the lease. But anyhow, this report came out.
And Roger Goodell is a Western New Yorker.
And Roger Goodell is a Western New Yorker. So is Chuck Schumer. There are a lot of powerful people from Western New York. This report came out a couple of days ago. Yesterday, the lieutenant governor of the state of New York essentially stood up and said, there's a financial penalty for doing this. And
now.
Yeah. But basically.
It reaches a point where it decreases.
Yeah, but it basically said that, indicated that the full weight of the state government would go into preventing this from happening. So, Arash, I know, I want to start with you. The first thing I thought of when I saw this. We've had no comment from the Toronto group beyond the fact that, yes, we are interested in an NFL team. The first thing I thought of, somebody's trying to poison the waters for this group.
Absolutely they are.
This has got nothing to do. Like, there's no reason for them to leak this story. None whatsoever. This is somebody.
There is no benefit to the Toronto group for this to happen.
This is somebody in Western New York.
Correct.
Trying to do this. Let me ask you, where do you see this going?
I think where this is going to go to, it's going to come to a head where there is going to have to be some kind of public referendum on whether or not there's going to be public funds to help finance a new stadium in Western New York, be it Orchard Park, be it Buffalo, be it in that surrounding area. Because with the state of the lease and how the late Ralph Wilson left the state of the franchise, he effectively made sure, although apparently there's a one little window 7 years in, but effectively for 20 years, this team cannot relocate unless there's going to be a serious financial.
There is one loophole.
$28.5 million or something in 2020.
Yeah. So
I think the ultimate end kind of game here is Roger Goodell, the National Football League, they do not want this franchise to leave that area. They really don't. And they definitely don't want it to go to Toronto. The priorities for the National Football League are, one, from a relocation standpoint or an expansion standpoint, number one is London. Before LA, before anywhere else. And they do not want to relocate that franchise, but it's not going to happen unless there's some public funds involved.
Ken?
For me, this is another one of these things where, for me, it just seems really convoluted right now. And obviously, there's somebody out there that, yeah, doesn't want this Toronto thing to happen, because why in the world would people trying to move this team to Toronto leak news like this? So that seems a little strange. And I think bids have to be in, if I'm not mistaken, by Tuesday. Yeah, you have to make your intentions known. But this is going to drag on for a long time. It's going to get mucky. It's going to get muddy. There's going to be a lot of politics involved. This is one of those stories, I don't know about you guys, this is one of those stories that, for me, I'm not that into the business side of sports. I mean, everybody has to be, but for me, it just, call me when it's over. It just seems so confusing, and just, it's just a bunch of he said, she said stuff right now. So call me when it's over. And if the Bills were to eventually move to Toronto, it's going to take a long time. And for me, I'm with Arash. London's obviously the NFL's priority, and there has to be an easier way to get a team to Toronto than to go through all this garbage that would involve getting the Bills here. And also, one final note, can we say with the Toronto, it's part of the Rogers family, Larry Tannenbaum and John Bon Jovi? Because I keep thinking that the keyboard player is somehow involved in the purchase of this team, and I get confused, and I think it's the whole band, Richie Sambora, the keyboard player.
Richie's not in the band anymore.
There you go. That's also confusing. So just to clarify, it's just John Bon Jovi. I think we should be clear on that.
Okay.
That's a long way of saying I don't care.
You know, Elliot, I'm one of these people. I've been telling people, I don't think we're going to see an NFL team in Toronto. I just think there are too many hoops to jump through.
This is, and I generally agree with you, this is, like, Toronto's enough of a boogeyman in the eyes of the Bills and their fans because of the games that were moved here, that it's very easy to scare everybody and mobilize everybody by using the Toronto group as, you know, the evil demon trying to steal the Buffalo Bills. I completely agree with you. The fact that all of this group's, like, you know, they're trying to create fear. You know, I mean, I've dealt with, you know, Larry Tannenbaum quite a bit. He's not a guy who volunteers a lot of information. Yeah. He certainly wouldn't do it for this. So, you know, I think that I agree with you. I think it's a scare tactic. I think it's a brilliant scare tactic by the people who are trying to keep the Bills in Buffalo. And by getting the government, the state government, to get involved, they're basically pressuring them to say, are you in or are you out? Because if you're going to be out, this is going to be on you. As for the team moving to Toronto, we all know that ever since the NFL lost with Al Davis, nothing happens without the commissioner's say-so. Like, they're not moving to, like, Roger Goodell is not scared about the team moving to Toronto unless he wants it to move to Toronto.
Well, there was
if he wants to put it somewhere else, that's where it'll go.
But let's just
remember
this.
There was also a report this week, though.
Unless there's a new stadium, unless there's a new facility, the Bills are not staying there long term.
No, but they are going where the league wants them to go.
Correct. But I think that's important to point out. moving forward, especially when all this talk is about a new stadium location, that there has to be a new building there if they're going to stay in Western New York.
Why would Larry Tannenbaum and the Rogers family want to buy that team if they weren't, if it couldn't be moved to Toronto? I mean, obviously it's a...
They want to move, if they want it, they want it to move to Toronto. You just say, we're not moving it to Toronto. I mean, you can't come out and say, hey.
But it's never a bad thing to go... If you're serious about owning an NFL team someday, it's like, remember Larry Tannenbaum was the guy who tried to bring the Raptors in the first place, and he lost to Bitov. But years later, he was there. And it's never bad to get into the good graces of the league. It's never bad to go through the process to understand how it works. I mean, like, and right now, I mean, they're kind of being used as a boogeyman. If they get the stadium done, then they're going to be thankful for it.
But there's nothing wrong with owning an NFL team either.
You're going to make money.
Yeah, you're going to make money.
The television numbers continue to, the television revenue numbers continue to go up.
You make money.
You spend ridiculous amounts of money, you make ridiculous amounts of money. And you can just add it to your empire.
Although it was interesting hearing Petty this week talk about how they felt that the revenues were not going to be
enough. Yeah.
That was interesting hearing him talk. You know, it's funny, like years ago when I was doing CFL, I asked a bunch of owners, like, were you really afraid of an NFL team coming to Toronto? And, you know, people would always talk about what stadium, where are you going to play? And one of the owners said to me, do you think you could sell 30,000 seat licenses in Toronto for $30,000? And I said, sure, I think you could do that easily. He said, there's $900 million to build a stadium.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, that makes sense to me. You think you could build a good stadium for $900 million?
Yeah, that's the cost of a stadium these days.
Yeah.
Would a stadium have to be built? Would a new football-only facility have to be built in order for the team to move here? In other words, would the NFL say you can play at the Rogers Center?
Maybe as a stop.
Maybe for a year or two. Right.
But yeah, you'd have to have a plan where you say, we know that this is...
The ground would have to be... You'd have to be well underway.
Yeah, the Rogers Center would not be the end destination of a National Football League team.
It could be the Cow Palace for, what, 3-4 years?
I wouldn't even say three, four years.
Yeah, no. Two?
I would almost say, Ken, I wouldn't be surprised if they ever got a team. And so for argument's sake, if it was an expansion team, you delay the start of the team until you know maybe you have to spend 1 year at Rogers.
And if it is a relocation, maybe you just play it in Buffalo over the last year or two.
Yeah, it'd be very welcome.
Where does LA fit into this? Because, you know, now there's also a report this week, and we're aware of it, that the NFL is in fact talking about essentially running an LA franchise, having the league run an LA franchise to get in there.
My belief with LA has always been that they are the city that allows National Football League owners to hold other cities hostage. What I mean by that is in Minnesota, they just got a new stadium because effectively the ownership in Minnesota told the lawmakers and the public, hey, if you're not going to give us money for a new stadium, we're going to L.A. St. Louis is going to run into that exact same situation. Mm-hmm. As soon as that L.A. carrot is gone, you have no leverage. You have no opportunity to say we are relocating if you don't come up with this. And it's happened over and over again that these cities are held hostage by the owners who have said we're gonna go unless you step up.
I don't know. I was gonna say I don't know if people in LA want a team.
Yeah, they're fine without it. The TV numbers are fine there.
Yeah,
it's an SC. I mean, that's the USC Trojans from a football standpoint. Town.
It's odd because you never. And I remember talking to Mark Gannis, a sports marketing guy, about this, and he was talking about Tim Lewicki and Lewicki's involvement in trying to get a team there. And it made an interesting point. He said, you know, you never really get the sense in L.A. that a whole bunch of people are standing up and slamming their fists and a table and saying, get us an NFL team. So you don't get that.
It's
there's
not
no
Cleveland.
Critical. No. Yeah, there's
they don't,
no
they don't need
critical
an identity.
Mass toward it. Yeah.
They have another identity. They're L.A. They don't need to get behind their whatever the name of the team would or could be. And everybody from L.A. is from, you know, wherever.
But it is
from away.
From away. From away. You're from away. So are you guys, by the way.
Why London? Why is the NFL so fixated on London?
They love London. They think there is an opportunity in that European market that just opens up so many. I mean, it's the revenue streams, the population base, the television opportunities.
It's so unworkable, isn't it? Just logistically to
why
fly players over there, play a game, and
2 week homestand, 3 week homestand, little life on the road.
You sound like Antonio Davis. You don't want people to learn the metric system.
They're not traveling by steamboat, are they?
I know. It just seems you just see all sorts of logistical problems with playing games on a regular basis in L.A. or in London.
I think it'd be fine.
I think it made everybody more money.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge, their favorite color is green.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The biggest challenge with a London team would be luring free agents.
Yes.
I bet you.
I was going to say proper nutrition.
You know what? I bet you, Arash, if it was proven that that team did better because of how it wreaked havoc on other teams' travel schedules, you wouldn't have a problem. If that team won, you wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, it all comes down to how well the team is run. If it's a successful team, yeah. You're going to have no problem getting free agents to go play there. Plus, you know what?
Hold on. Yeah? You're thinking logically here. Yeah, you're not into the brain of a professional football player who makes some amazing decisions.
But you know what? Look at the NBA in Toronto. When the Raptors were a good team,
right?
But they got Hakeem Olajuwon to come here. They got Vince Carter to sign an extension here. But the moment they became a bad team, I have to cross the customs. I have to carry my own bags.
Yeah.
Winning cures all ills.
Yes. I just wonder if a guy who grew up with the SEC in his backyard, how he acclimatizes himself to life in London.
Yeah, you know, we used to say the same thing about players coming to Canada. Like, I remember Damon Stoudemire first year before they bought all the players' dishes. Like, he'd watch on TV and he'd come up one day and goes, "How much curling do you guys have on television here?" Like, I'm trying to watch a basketball game and all I got is curling. And, you know,
that's actually a good point.
Yeah, you know what? I think now they can find ways to handle all this.
Right.
And when you win, everybody's okay.
The NFL also made news this week. Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice received a 2-game suspension for assaulting his fiancée. It was then his fiancée and dragging her into an elevator. And, of course, this is a league that will suspend somebody 4 games for firing up a spliff. The whole Ray Rice story, there's so much involved in it. But, yeah, I keep sitting here thinking, boy, the NFL's got it wrong again. But does it matter? You know,
it definitely matters.
No, but let me rephrase it. But does anybody, you know, Ray Rice jerseys are going to sell the same amount? I don't imagine the Ravens will be picketed during their games.
Well, they might be, but you won't know.
Yeah,
you'll know. Somebody will write.
There will be a bigger protest over the name of the Redskins than there will be over the treatment of Ray Rice.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's embarrassing. There's no other way to say it. There's no way any normal thinking person can support it. You know, the one thing I always ask in these situations is, what don't we know here? Mm-hmm. But I don't know what the answer is there. Like, what possibly could we not know about this story that could still make a 2-game suspension look good? It's ridiculous. I mean, it really is, but I mean, some of the commentary coming out of it is even more stupid than that, but
I just don't buy into...
I don't understand what it could be.
I don't buy into the, somebody got caught smoking a joint and they got 4 games and somebody who does this gets 2 games. Because, look, they're so mutually exclusive. The drug issue is a collectively bargained matter where if a guy tests positive, the first positive test is 4 games. Boom.
You know.
Point final. That's it. There's no gray area there. That's just what it is. But, I mean, the real story here is just how this is just so prevalent in football. The violence on the field just continues to trickle off of it.
Well, it's a game that, let's face it, rewards violence. So ever since these kids sign up for youth football, they're taught hit hard, You know, hit, tackle hard. They're taught violence. They're taught get jacked up, and that's gonna translate.
To me, the bigger issue is the culture within the walls. Is if you can play, this doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
John Harbaugh yesterday begins his statements about the Ray Rice situation. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
All John Harbaugh cares about, hey, just get me my running back to me as quickly as you can.
Well, fans are the same way.
Sure.
You know, like when Michael Vick came back, all the Eagles fans supported him and everybody else didn't. Like, that's kind of the way it goes.
Why? Why does winning matter that much? Like, look what...
Are you a fan?
Yeah, but to a certain point.
I'm not saying
point.
I agree with it, but I see that it's out there.
There's so many things that are more important than winning a football game. Like, you don't go around and do this stuff. This is just... we know you don't go around and do this stuff. I'm just amazed that... It's two games. Now, maybe you suspend him for a long, long time and he comes back, he apologizes, and sure, you can come back because forgiveness is a great thing to give to somebody, but two games, really?
And it's a terribly light suspension.
We just go, as long as he... I'm not saying we, but the football mentality, as you said, Arash, is as long as we win. And that, to me, that's just so wrong. We shouldn't be teaching people that as long as you win, this stuff is okay.
Peter King kind of broke down what he thought the reasoning was. And in other words, Peter King talked to Roger Goodell and said, okay, why did this come down? And one of the issues or one of the things that comes across is that essentially they have no prior record with Ray Rice. But he's a good guy. He's really a good guy thing at work. Aren't they all? Yeah.
The one thing I will say about that, Jeff, is I know from dealing with sometimes suspensions in the NHL, and I will say it's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, these are like on-ice suspensions I'm talking about, is that lawyers do rule the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that commissioners don't like to see their suspensions overturned. And if he had legal advice that said to him, if you go more than that, you'll get it overturned, I could see that's exactly why Goodell did it.
100%.
Right now,
Mark Cohan has, this is on the field issues. It's because of the way the CBA works in the Canadian Football League. I mean, Kyrie Zabair basically tried to decapitate John Cornish, the most outstanding player in the league last year in the first game of the season. Cohan didn't suspend him. Probably knew in his heart of hearts that he couldn't, because an arbitrator likely, that Hebert would win on an appeal through an arbitrator.
Well, and I understand that, because like I said, lawyers do rule the day. They run the world. But, sometimes you've got to be unafraid to stick your neck out.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to be willing to lose.
I think there are times when you're going to say, I may lose this argument, but I want to be on the right side of the loss. Mm-hmm. For lack of a better
And the
term.
Statement that you send.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is one of those cases where I wish Roger Goodell had a bit more cojones and said, if I get this overturned on appeal, at least I was on this side of it in the first place.
Yep. That was my thinking, and this is. And you're right. I'm sure he just didn't sit down and look at the dartboard and throw it. And, two games.
Mm-hmm.
He's got legal advice on this. But Elliot's right. Sometimes, and I talked to people in Bud Selig's office about this, that they've had suspensions for on-field instances where they know that they're going to get overturned or that they're going to get halved. But you want to be able to say, we ruled this way. Yeah, it was overturned, but this was our take on it. I just want to read this very quickly. This is Peter King's breakdown of why Goodell was softer on Rice than a four-game suspension. Rice's wife, according to a source, made a moving and apparently convincing case to Goodell during a June 16th hearing at Goodell's office in Manhattan that the incident in the hotel elevator was a one-time event, that nothing physical had happened in their relationship before or since. She, in fact, urged Goodell, the source said, to not ruin Rice's image and career. This was Rice's first violation of any NFL policy, personal conduct, or substance abuse in his six-year NFL career. He was not convicted of a crime in conjunction with the incident, which makes me think this is where the legal advice comes in. And the New Jersey prosecutor chose not to pursue a case against him last spring after he entered a pre-trial counseling program. I'm okay with that so far. Then this. Rice has been the Ravens' leading player in volunteer work in the community.
Oh, here we go.
At the time of the assault, he led a Maryland anti-bullying campaign. At the Super Bowl last winter, he was part of an NFL player panel for a cable TV anti-bullying show and spoke emotionally about needing to be vigilant on the subject. I'm okay. I mean, I'm seeing the legal, but up to that point, To me, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. It
doesn't matter if you're, you know, doing volunteer work in the community.
On the hockey side, what happened to Semyon Varlamov? How many games did he get suspended for?
You know, it's an interesting question because I thought a lot about that and this. The difference is they had video on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Varlamov was a he said, she said. It's tough.
Right.
And I think if you ask any lawyer or any police officer who gets in the middle of a domestic dispute where there's enough, for lack of a better term, gray area either way, it's difficult. It's
but
hard to know.
This was on camera.
This
you
was
saw
on
it.
Camera. You saw right. it. And, you know, the other thing, too, is the NFL had a case a couple of years ago with the Kansas City Chiefs where, you know, people there was death involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Javon Belcher.
Yeah, Javon Belcher. And I think that when you have that situation, to me, that should move the needle. You should be able to say, look, you know, we had this before. Nobody needs to see this happen again. Whether you're on the guilty side or the innocent side,
you know how
you've
got to
be vigilant.
Works. All they do is sweep this stuff away.
Every league does that.
Right.
Every league does that. I'm just saying that I think when you've been through what they've been through, I think you reach a point where you kind of have to say, you know, how much is too much? When do we have to start setting a tone? And I think he lost a real opportunity to do it.
I mean, I was going to say, where do you think it? There's nothing, Roger. Nothing's going to happen here. There'll be outrage probably for another week.
If that.
NFL teams will be getting camp, and we'll go back to talking about the Redskins and Tom Brady's hair.
A couple
and,
guys will pop their ACLs yeah. suddenly. Yeah.
And some media people will stop making dumb comments about it, so then it'll go away then, too.
Yeah, there'll be something else to scream about.
Yeah we're talking about a comment Stephen A. Smith made that got him in an awful lot of trouble. And I think, essentially, when you hear things like that, when it becomes part of the discourse, you realize that there's still a lot of misperceptions out there about what domestic violence is and, mm-hmm. and you know, sort of the lack of understanding of what it is.
I guess.
And I don't know if the NFL is ever going to, I don't know if the NFL is ever going to change that. To me, a lot of it is a societal thing.
Yeah. I think as a society, along with what Arash said, that all that matters is winning. As a society, we have to step back and think about what is more important, a football game or someone's life and someone.
Ken,
not,
I think you would shudder.
I know.
To hear
and that
what
is
the percentage.
I know.
Oh,
yeah. And I totally agree. And that is what's sad about this. That is what's sad about this whole thing. I love sports, but I know I'd like to think I have my priorities straight. My family comes before that. My family comes before my job. I'm not one of those guys who sacrifices an entire Sunday by sitting in front of a TV and ignoring my child for 14 hours. That's just not how I roll.
What's your child's vote on that?
He can't really talk too well yet. So, but I mean, that's, and I get it. You should be a diehard fan, and that's cool. And I'm cool if you watch the NFL for 12 hours every Sunday, but there's something more important than Ray Rice being in the Baltimore Ravens lineup right now.
I do think NFL fans, we'll wrap this up, but I do think NFL fans are more forgiving than fans in other sports.
Well, because of the winning thing.
No, but look at the drug thing. In baseball, if you test positive for using a performance-enhancing substance, you are viewed as a horrible person, mm-hmm. and your moral values are questioned. In the NFL, it's hurry up and get this 4-game suspension out of the way. We need you.
Yeah. And in the NFL, it's quite often it's kind of a shrug.
I think every sport turns a blind eye. Almost every sport will always turn more of a blind eye to somebody who can help you win. It's just the way it works.
No, absolutely. Yeah. The worst thing you want to be is the guy, the 25th man in a major league roster getting in trouble or the backup offensive line.
Yeah, then you're getting
then you're getting the book thrown.
Yeah, then you're
easy to make.
Look out.
Then you're in trouble. We've got a lot to talk about. I want to cover in the primetime bullets as well. More media stuff. Richard Deitch tweeting out that apparently Fox is not allowing any of its commentators to appear in WEEI in Boston as a result of statements about Aaron Andrews. We want to talk about that, and it's wider than that, actually. Fox is also not advertising with the parent company of WEEI, which is a U.S.-based company called Entercom, as a result of statements made about Aaron Andrews. So I want to talk about that little sort of inside media, I guess, if you want to call it that. And the Friday Roundtable continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Blue Jays versus Yankees. Tonight at 7. Now more great sports talk on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, we are back with the Friday Roundtable. Jeff Blair, Arash Madani, Ken Reed, Elliot Friedman. You guys...
I'm trying to get Arash into the Def Leppard we hear on the radio side of this.
No, it's just that it's like you're two children from Nova Scotia over there. It's like,
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you
I
grow old
I sense the jealousy.
Yeah, just because you grow old doesn't mean you have to grow up.
Right.
Anyhow. We're giddy together.
Absolutely. Yes, you are. So kind of a breaking news story, I guess, in the media world. You know, people out there will remember Erin Andrews and her Fox Sports and her interview during the All-Star game with brain cramp.
Adam Wainwright.
To say nothing of her interview after the NFC Championship game with Richard Sherman.
Yeah, yeah. But the Adam Wainwright interview, anyhow, that... you know, Adam Wainwright kind of, he fessed up. He said that he kind of teed a ball up for Derek Jeter so Derek Jeter could get a hit in his last All-Star game. It was not a great interview. And you're right, Erin Andrews has that track record with the Richard Sherman incident last year. Anyhow, Kurt Minahan, a commentator on WEEI, goes on the air and calls her a gutless blank.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's asked to apologize, which he does, sort of. He apologizes for calling her that, but then he...
Makes it worse.
He goes on and says that if she weighed 15 pounds more, she'd be a waitress at Perkins. So, anyhow, this has gone on and on and on. And the upshot of this is Fox Sports has now decided it is not only will it not allow its people to go on WEEI, but it's also pulling advertising from any station owned by Entercom, which is the company that owns WEEI. And there's a couple of big markets. There's Kansas City, San Francisco, and Seattle.
Indianapolis
is another market. We've read the comments. I've actually gone back and listened to them.
Who talks like that?
Right.
Yeah.
It's somebody who needs ratings.
Well, the show has been dropped by
then
Nessun.
Again, like, that didn't work.
The show like that he was on has been dropped by Nessun.
What person with a brain talks like that?
Right.
What? Why the hate? Why the outrage at Erin Andrews? What did she do other
that's
than
like,
just doing her job?
That's like one of Arash's tweeters. Like that's like,
yeah,
that's
seriously.
What it is.
The people who tell me to go back to Pakistan and cover cricket.
That was my favorite one.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's like somebody like that you expect from somebody who you don't like. Doesn't
you don't
think
even like
any,
cricket.
Anybody knows who they are.
Yes, you know you're on a microphone.
Yeah, you know, like people are listening to you.
Yeah.
So,
and by the way, can I just say what's with all the outrage over the Richard Sherman interview? Because that was the soundbite of the year, mm-hmm. and Erin Andrews got it. So yeah. Why did everyone know the Richard Sherman interview? That was the best sound all year,
absolutely.
And she got it. Why do people say the Richard Sherman interview? She did.
You know,
I wouldn't know what to do either, but she got
the
sound.
I'd say two of her famous interviews were those two.
Yeah, right. And there's stuff going on. I think a lot of people, frankly, and I don't understand why, because I certainly don't think Pam Oliver's, you know, an Edward R. Murrow candidate as a journalist, but there are people out there who are annoyed as well that she's basically lost her job. And I think a lot of that has to do with Erin Andrews as well.
It's lonely at the top. Okay, Erin Andrews, and I will say this, I used to do a bit of work with Erin. I like her. She's at the top. When you're at the top, people come at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Doris Burke went through the same during the NBA Finals.
That's right. That's you know, right.
And there is no, sorry, Elliot, there is no better sideline reporter
she's
in
great.
Sports than Doris Burke.
Yeah, she's great. She's really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think obviously some of it is women related. There's no question about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's...
But I think in Erin, there's another inherent jealousy and dislike because she's really good looking. I do. I think a lot of it comes to that.
I'm not certain, and I don't like, just generally, I find a lot of those interviews to be, I mean, especially football. I don't learn anything from them at halftime. I just don't. Nobody ever says anything. But when you think about what has happened to Aaron Andrews over the course of his career, I kind of feel sorry for it because it's, and I'll give Fox credit. I'll give him credit for standing up here because for the longest time, I don't think somebody, I've always had the feeling that people haven't had her back enough. People in our industry haven't had her back enough. That there's.
I don't know about that. I mean, you know, obviously the thing when the guy filmed her through the peephole, mm-hmm. ESPN defended her and did a really good job
yes.
by her.
Right.
But you know what? The one thing about that I feel, honestly, Jeff, is that we shouldn't have, any of us, shouldn't have to depend on our bosses to protect us all the time. You know, in this day and age where it's social media and a lot of our job requirements to be on social media for most of us, you have to have a thick skin on your own. You have to be able to ignore people or block people. You can't always have your bosses running towards your back. Have a thick skin, deal with it, or don't go on it. This is an exception. This is not some idiot on Twitter. This mm-hmm. is another member of the media with whom your guys do business.
But he's still
I don't
an
mind
idiot.
That. What's that? It's
still an idiot.
It's still an idiot. But like you know, that I think is fine for your station to come to your defense. But if I was Aaron, I wouldn't always want people coming to my defense. Sometimes you just have to suck it up and eat it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We all get crap thrown at us on social media. Ignore it. Block it. Don't always whine and complain to people about it. It's part of the job.
Yeah, I think it's pretty admirable, though, that her company is coming here to her defense in this case because she didn't do anything wrong. I mean, and then she's got this guy just going after her. And there used to be an unwritten rule amongst us in the media that you kind of don't bash your media brethren. And that's totally gone
that's
out
gone.
The window now.
That's gone.
It's like we're all, it's like.
You suck,
this is, yeah, exactly. It's like, well, you know, I think you suck, Madani. But it's like these
go
microphones.
Cover cricket, Madani.
Right. It's like these microphones have
in
become
Pakistan.
Our own little Twitter account. And I don't just want to go through life going, oh, he sucks, this sucks, that sucks. Who says I can do Aaron Andrews' job? Who says she can do the job I do? She's hired because she's hired. I'm hired because I'm hired. I got
tell
news
you
for you.
She looked better in pink than you.
Well, I'm not going to win an Edward
R. Murrow, any color.
Whatever the heck it is either, you know?
Preach, reader. Go.
Yeah, but
keep
it is
going.
What it
come
is.
You're on a roll. You've even got notes. Continue.
Yeah, these are stats and stuff like that. And I got to keep them tonight for Connected. But
oh, you must be an analytics guy.
Yeah,
you have
anyway,
stats written on a piece of
but
paper.
But I think it's...
Are you the next assistant general manager of the Maple Leafs?
This is a broader picture, and it goes back to the wars, what we're saying about the analytics and the stats guy. Everybody just seems to have a yes or a no, or a right or a wrong answer, and I got to take a stance, and I'm against this, and I'm for this. Maybe it's just, you know, let love rule. Just everybody needs to chill out. So you didn't like the way somebody did an interview with someone? Oh, it's the end of the world. So what? Chill out.
Thank God there aren't a lot of you around here. There'd be no talk radio.
That's right. Seriously.
Whatever. But it's just, I'm just sick of people going for the throat at other people if they just disagree with them over something. And it's just.
So you think Phaneuf should be traded?
See, at least that's a hockey matter or a sports matter, not a personal matter. This is a personal attack this guy's making.
Well, to me, anybody who says that about someone is just a loser.
Yeah.
Like, why do you need to say that? Like you're just revealing yourself to be.
Let's talk about something else.
Just a loser.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. To me, it's not even worth. Like, it's worth talking about the overall, I guess, effect of what this guy says. But it's not worth talking about him specifically.
Okay, let's
what
move
he
on.
Does.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Andrew Wiggins. Kind of a story we kind of been following as well. The Cleveland Cavaliers, of course, have LeBron James.
Can't trade him for 30 days now.
Can't trade Andrew Wiggins 29. For 30 days now.
29.
The countdown is on. You could still do it before NBA training camp.
29
camp's
days.
It's under the NHL clock as we come into work.
That's right. I kind of looked at this and I kind of made the point. I don't understand why Cleveland is in a hurry right now.
They're not.
They shouldn't be. Kevin Love is not going anyplace else.
Well, that's not quite
Golden
true.
State
what if Chicago or Golden State makes the offer?
Golden State is not going to give them Klay Thompson. And they've got to have Klay Thompson to get that deal done. They're not going to get Steph Curry. If the deal is that attractive to Minnesota right now, Bennett and Wiggins, it's going to be attractive in December or November. Let's see. I want to see how Wiggins and Tristan Thompson and Varejo and LeBron and Kyrie Irving, I want to see them on the court together. I want to see if they play together.
Does LeBron want to see them on the court together?
Who's running that team?
Yeah.
Two words, LeBron. Well, yeah.
I think we'll know. We know LeBron's got the out clause after a year, and it's a two-year contract, and I really think we'll know if he really is there for the long... If LeBron is there for the long term, then I think he's going to say, you know what? Let's see the Wiggins thing. Let's see how it works. Yeah, but, I mean, if he forces the issue and they get Kevin Love and they trade Andrew Wiggins as part of that, if I'm a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, I'll tell you what, I'm hoping like hell they win a championship in 2 years because he won't be around. That, to me, indicates he's thinking short term.
I really wonder where the Tristan Thompson piece factors into all of this. If we see Tristan Thompson get a contract extension, are we going to see some kind of sign and trade?
He's with LeBron's agent, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. But that's we're talking about a guy who's going to be due 40, almost maybe $50 million in that range. How many guys under contract on that payroll are you going to have in that market? And would that be the guy that Minnesota could stomach as part of a package that if you sign and trade Thompson, that maybe the T-Wolves, and as they start over again, mm-hmm. might be able to have. I think that's one of the intriguing pieces there.
Have we thought of this? What if Cleveland does take on all these dudes and then LeBron does opt out after 1 year? Then what happens? Then does everyone go to the next team LeBron goes to?
Then no one ever believes a word LeBron says again.
Hey, what did you say about winning cures everything, about how players suddenly wanted to come to Toronto and now players suddenly want to go to Cleveland?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about that. And the one thing I would kind of disagree with you a little bit is if Love goes there and he signs long term, they're going to win a lot. They're going to have a chance.
They're in the conversation.
In the conversation every year. And I think what this guy wants to do, he's got two titles. He could have won four. He got two. Like all these guys, like him, Bryant, they want the seven. They want to beat Jordan. Jordan got seven, six.
And none of them will.
They want the shot at it.
But they want the speed dial version of it. They just want to, let's get the guys together and win. Jordan, he built something. He's stuck with it. LeBron's just kind of hopping around.
Some good news, by the way. I just want to report. We just watched Mark Burley warming up in the field at Yankee Stadium. He's not losing yet. The Jays are not losing this game.
Sounds like, you know, one of those nights where you're having a bad night in blackjack in Vegas, and you're like, I can't lose the next hand. There's no way I can lose the next hand. And all of a sudden, it's 16 in a row. I'm calling it. The streak ends tonight.
I'm with there you, Friedman.
Mark Burley beats the Yankees.
There you go. You heard it here first. I'm not echoing that sentiment.
Neither is Arash.
No.
Friedman's on his own on that one.
Yeah, Arash and I are going to go watch some cricket.
I'm optimistic.
By the way, our thanks again to Subway for providing the smorgasbord of subs. Today's sub of the day is their delicious tuna sub. For more information on locations and deals, go to subway.ca. You want to read the bottom line? You got the announcer voice.
Subway. Eat fresh.
There you go. Thank you very much for that. All right. For Arash Madani, Ken Reed, and Elliot Friedman, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on the Primetime Roundtable today. Thanks to everybody behind the glass. Jen, Neil, I was going to say Travis, Matt, and Ryan for the past couple of weeks. Sid Sixera will be in this chair next week, and then the man himself, Bob McCowan, will return the week after. I will be in the Jeff Blair Show from 9 to 12 on Monday. You can read me as well, sportsnet.ca. Have a great weekend, everybody.